Hello and welcome. You are listening to Gore and Guilty Podcast. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Greg.
And this is our first episode that we are recording in 2022. So happy new year, guys. Ooh. Hopefully this one's going to be a good year. And today we will be going to talk about the paranormal, I believe. What case are we covering today, Greg?
We are going to be talking about the paranormal today. And we're actually going to be covering two cases with one common theme. The common theme is the Warrens, Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Aha, yes.
Are you familiar with these two?
I am, yes. So this will be exciting. I haven't looked at them for a little bit. So I'm looking forward to taking a deep dive again into the Warrens. Such a good story.
Yeah, definitely. They are like super famous for just being these relentless pursuers of the paranormal, constantly doing investigations. I think they said they investigated over 10,000 cases.
Wow.
But there's a healthy level of skepticism around, were these guys legit? Were they just fraudsters? And we'll be talking about all of that in today's episode, as well as two of the most famous cases that they ever investigated, which is the Amityville Horror House.
Yes.
And Annabelle the Doll.
Yes, of course. Oh, that's so good. Exciting.
Before we start talking about all things scary, how are you doing, Georgia? How's life?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. What have I been up to? I started a new hobby. I don't think I'm very good at it yet, but ooh, I'm trying, which is climbing, like bouldering, which is quite fun.
Nice.
So I'm going to trying to get fit and climb. The only issue is I'm sort of scared of heights, which kind of is, I don't know, a bit of an issue with climbing. It's going well, so yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Have you had any falls?
Not yet. So luckily, I've managed to like climb down a little bit and then jump because you don't have safety gear, but it's not too high. But I always get to like three quarters of the way up and I look down and I'm like, oh no. So I just gotta like not look down and just keep going and then it's all fine. But yeah, it's good fun. It's good exercise, but not feeling like exercise really.
That's true. So I like exercise like that where you don't, because you know, with something like running, all you can think about is that you're doing exercise. It's just like, I am tired, I am in pain.
Just get through it, just gotta get through it. Yeah, exactly.
Whereas with something like climbing, I guess you've got a bit more of a goal.
Yeah, and your mind isn't on like the physical exertion. You're just like trying to get to the top, or like you've got your mind elsewhere, really. I suppose it's probably similar to like football, when you play football.
Yeah, I think so.
When you like enjoy it, but you don't realise that you're running around all the time.
Yeah, until like the halftime or full-time whistle goes, then you're blowing, you're like...
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so that's my new year, new me sort of thing this year. So we'll see how that goes and how long I stick it out for, but there you go.
That's your resolution.
Yeah, how about you? What have you been up to?
Well, it's been a busy start to 2022 for me. I started a new job, which is great. Also, by the way, I've just realised this is the first time I've seen you in 2022. So, Happy New Year, Georgia.
Hey, yes, Happy New Year, of course.
And loads of stuff's new. I kind of... What's been good, yeah, is because, as you know, I've not been drinking for a while. Also, I've been like trying to exercise. I feel like I've already done my New Year's resolution. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you started it early.
Like I feel organised. I feel, you know, you like when someone says, hey, can you do this for me? And you're like, oh, I've already done half of it. I feel like I'm doing that. I've got a head start on 2022, which is great.
That's so good.
And I just hit 100 days no drink, which is great.
Oh my gosh, that's so good. That's impressive.
Yeah, that's I didn't think I'd get there, but we are still going strong. And what else is new in 2022 for Greg? Talking about myself in the third person, apparently. I think it's just that I'm just trying to like hit the ground running this year No 2021 hangover. And yeah, just living life to the fullest. Cool, that's cheesy, isn't it?
Yeah, but I love it. I think that's great. I think that's probably the same for me in the way that I feel like this is the year. This is going to be the year. It's got to be, right?
Yeah, this is it.
So, yeah, we're all going to do it together and get through it, which is great.
Oh, I'm back on the gram. That's the last thing. I'm back on the gram.
Yes.
I caved.
We've got to do a shameless plug. What's your bio? What's your tag? Was it?
Is it tag?
Username. Account name. Tag. Username. Oh my gosh. Something. There you go. You know, that just like highlights how little I know about all of this stuff. What's your username, Greg?
I went with Greg the Dream for reasons that probably aren't very good. It's not a very profound name or anything. I was just like, God, I wish I could dream up a good name. And I was like, oh, Greg the Dream.
That'll do.
That'll do for me.
No, I think it's good. I think it's good. So yeah, if you want to go and follow Greg on his day-to-day life, then go follow him on that.
It's not very exciting, guys. I'm mostly just researching and editing and doing work. And that's it.
Yeah, same. Oh, that's good.
Right, let's put aside the gram and let's jump into this case, shall we?
Yes, let's do it.
So, as mentioned at the beginning, today we're doing a paranormal episode. And it may not have been obvious for those of you that don't know who Ed and Lorraine Warren are, because the title of the episode is going to be Ed and Lorraine Warren, I assume. And we normally put the title as like a victim or a killer or some sort of criminal. But no, this is a paranormal episode. And well, depending on your stance, the Warrens have committed no crime.
Ooh.
The Warrens are possibly the most famous people in history when it comes to paranormal investigations. If you think you recognise the name but can't place them, it may well be from one of the Conjuring films, which are based on some of the cases that the Warrens have investigated.
Yeah.
There are a ton of stories, cases, experiences, and evidence that the Warrens collected over the years. Far too much to cover in one episode. Don't fret though, this isn't the first part of a multi-parter or series. It just means that depending on how well this episode goes down, we may return to the Warrens and their experiences for inspiration for future episodes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You should check them out, by the way, Georgia. There's so many. It's crazy.
Yeah. We can definitely do like a little, we could definitely do something where we like go back to some more paranormal investigations that they've done in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. The return to the Warrens.
Yes, there you go.
So the plan for this episode is to talk a little bit about the Warrens, where they came from and what they did. And we're going to go through two of their most famous cases, but not in huge amounts of detail or we'd be here all day. And the other thing is that when researching the Warrens, you can find a lot about the cases they covered, but not so much about like what they actually did.
Mm.
It's kind of funny. You'd like be reading about this case and then it'd just be like, oh yeah, and then the Warrens were there. So they're kind of the source of the inspiration for like which cases we're covering today, but there's less details about, hey, they actually did A, B, C and D to investigate. It's more just like they were involved.
Okay.
The Warrens were paranormal investigators by trade, but they were also authors and gave lectures. Ed was a self-taught and self-professed demonologist, whereas Lorraine was a clairvoyant and a medium. They worked together closely for most of their lives. During their careers, they claimed to have investigated over 10,000 cases.
Wow.
They were both born in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Ed in 1926 and Lorraine in 1927. However, they didn't meet until 1943. They were both still living in Connecticut at the time and were 16 years old. Ed was working at a movie theatre as an usher, and it was visited by Lorraine. They began dating. However, Ed ended up going to fight in World War II. Upon Ed's return, they married. Which is quite a nice story, isn't it? It's quite nice.
Yeah, that's very romantic. Lovely.
No Tinder, no Bumble, just a cinema.
Yeah, just a cinema, meeting at the cinema. I think that's lovely, isn't it?
Meeting at the cinema. Their experience of the paranormal started before they had even met, though. When Ed was 5, he claimed he saw an apparition at his family home.
Ooh.
He said he saw a dot of light that grew until it became his family's landlady that had died the year prior.
Ooh, spooky.
That is spooky, yeah. Imagine. I feel that's quite a common thing as well, like a dot of light that then kind of manifests into a person.
Yeah, like grows.
Spooky. There's probably a lot of people with torches scaring people out there.
Yeah, yeah.
That tickled myself. Ed records how she was semi-transparent, wearing what looked like some sort of shroud, and then she vanished. And that's a quote from The Demonologist, The Extraordinary Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Mm.
Soon after, Ed apparently began having dreams of dead relatives, some of which that he hadn't even met.
Ooh.
Yeah, kind of cool, right? I'm guessing he kind of squared that off with family members.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, I dreamed about this person, and they were like, oh my god, that's your great aunt or something.
Yeah, they're obviously speaking to him through his dreams.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty crazy. This even included an aunt, a deceased aunt, who told him messages about his future.
Ooh.
Eventually, Ed told his wife Lorraine about these experiences. But by all accounts, early on in their lives together, Lorraine was skeptical about ghosts. I don't know how she reacted to Ed's childhood stories specifically, but she's spoken about how when they first began their investigations, she was wary about the people they spoke to. She said this quote, "I thought they were kind of suffering from an overactive imagination or were making things up to get attention."
Interesting.
Which is quite interesting, right? Because they spend their whole lives...
Yeah, where this goes and like what their whole life basically becomes, and then have those doubts right from the start. It's really interesting how they've developed.
It definitely. And it makes you wonder, is it that they had an experience that led Lorraine to begin believing in ghosts? Or has she at some point realised, by believing in this, we can make a lot of money?
Exactly. That is, that's the debate.
Mm. Despite these beliefs about ghosts, Lorraine apparently discovered her clairvoyant abilities as a child. Lorraine once told a story about a day she spent at school. Her and the other children had just planted a sapling. As soon as they put it in the ground, Lorraine claimed she saw it as a fully grown tree with leaves blowing in the wind.
Ooh, okay.
Indeed. In 1952, the couple founded the New England Society for Psychic Research, which was a ghost hunting group. As they had a strong Catholic faith, the couple believed that hauntings were always caused by demons.
Right.
They believed that a lack of gods may invite unholy spirits into a home. Pretty famously, the society had a museum full of items with a strong negative energy attached to them. These would be acquired from investigations where the owner no longer wanted the item. Let's not dwell too much on the Warrens' history and how they met, though, because this is a paranormal episode. We want to get into the paranormal details, of course.
Yeah.
Let me just add, before we do, that the Warrens never charged money for their investigations, which I think is quite important because...
Yeah, definitely. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I guess it kind of lends then some credibility on whether or not they were doing this to make money or not. But equally, they did make a good amount of money by giving lectures, selling books, and licensing the rights to their stories for entertainment.
Mm.
So let's jump into a case they investigated. First up is the Amityville haunting case. On the 13th of November 1974, one suburban home in Long Island, New York, became a horrific crime scene. Ronald DeFeo Jr. used a rifle to kill his parents and 4 of his siblings while they slept. The youngest sibling was tragically only 9 years old.
Oh my gosh.
DeFeo Jr. claimed that he was told to do it by evil voices in his head that wanted him to kill. Although it sounds like a severe mental health issue, some believe to this day that he was hearing evil spirits within what they now call the Amityville Horror House.
Wow, okay.
On that day, Ronald DeFeo Jr. had left work and gone to a bar. He kept calling home but couldn't get through. He eventually left for home but went back to the bar at 6:30 a.m. crying, "You've got to help me. I think my mother and father are shot." The police found all 6 victims in their beds, shot with a rifle at about 3:15 a.m. and positioned on their stomachs.
Oh my gosh. Ugh.
There was no sign of struggle and no local reports of gunshots, which is weird, right? All of those...
6 people, right?
Yeah, none of them woke up.
At a minimum, that's 6 gunshots. Someone should have heard that, maybe.
You'd think one of the victims would wake up as well.
And yeah, for them all to be in bed.
Mm.
Oh, that is really spooky.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think those kind of weird factors kind of feed into the mystery of the paranormal stuff that follows this case. Also, by the way, what I said about you'd expect the victims to wake up, I'm not obviously victim blaming, I just mean it is strange that someone can shoot a gun 6 times in a house.
No, yeah, exactly, same. Yeah, and it's more that you would assume that it would have woken someone up for 6 people. I think that, like, the percentage of someone maybe hearing something or waking up would be a lot higher when they're 6. I just think it's quite it's a strange occurrence, really.
Yeah, and certainly a very tragic one.
Yes, definitely.
After DeFeo changed his story several times, from claiming he was at the bar during the killing, to then blaming the deaths on a local hitman who made Ronald Jr. watch the crime, he eventually confessed. Despite the killings being famous, some families have moved in and out of the house since. Which, would you do that? Would you move into a house with a...
I was just thinking that. I don't think so. I'm not willing to take that risk. Oh.
I don't think I could either. I just, even if... You'd just think everything that could even be remotely related to something paranormal would be paranormal.
I'd be on edge all the time. I mean, even just when we do these paranormal episodes, like, afterwards, like, any noise in the background, or I'm like, oh gosh, what's that? So, no way could I live there permanently.
No. Like, at the moment, if I hear a little bang in the night, then I just think, oh, it's a neighbour. If I heard it there, I'd be like, oh my god, there's a ghost trying to kill me.
Definitely.
Initially, the home remained empty for over a year. That changed when the Lutz family moved into the home in December 1975. They felt the home was a steal for $80,000. The house came complete with waterfront access, a boathouse, a swimming pool, garage, full basement. Amenities that many of us can only dream of. Although, a basement in a potentially haunted house?
No, thank you.
The family claimed to experience all sorts of bizarre and paranormal activity. Do you want to hear some examples?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
They reported that green slime would ooze from the walls. Which, for some reason, just gives me, like, Ghostbusters.
Right. I was going to say that. My mind went straight to Ghostbusters. What's that goo called? They call it something, don't they?
I don't know. I haven't watched it for years.
Ectoplasm.
Ectoplasm, of course.
That's the one.
I don't know if it was ectoplasm that the Lutz family was seeing, but it certainly sounds very creepy.
Definitely.
They also said they saw eyes peering into the house from outside. There were frequently foul odours, and the mother, Kathy Lutz, supposedly levitated in bed once.
Ooh, okay.
Apparently the father, George Lutz, would wake at 3:15 a.m. every single night, the exact time of the murders.
Wow. So creepy.
The Warrens were attracted to the property. They said the hot debate surrounding the case and whether it was a hoax led it to become one of the most stressful cases they investigated. The Warren stance always unwavered, though. They felt that Amity Place was truly haunted. Let's listen to a short clip of Lorraine Warren talking about it now.
Okay.
Why did it happen to me? I don't really know. I do not have the answers for that. I played in places like Amityville. That if you gave me $1 billion, I wouldn't live in the house tonight because it messed up my life and my husband's life. Terrible, horrible, horrible place. Oh, it's terrible. That's where I levitated with my body. in that moment, in which it was, the things that happened there were terrible, really, really terrible.
So what did you think of that?
Wow, so she's obviously pretty disturbed by whatever happened. It made it very clear that she never wants to go back and that it was a terrible time. But, oh, I don't, yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, that house seems so, so scary.
Yeah, definitely seems like she's quite shaken about it. Obviously, a lot of the context for the video is missing. One of the things I think she's talking, this is just me doing some guesswork, I think she's talking about, like, her career and why, like, because she says at the beginning, I don't know why it happened, places like Amityville. So she wasn't initially talking about Amityville, but that's...
Yes, yeah.
It's quite interesting to see how sternly she talks about it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. She's definitely shaken by whatever happened there.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like a very pleasant place.
No, certainly not. Supposedly, when they first approached the property, the Warrens knew that something was wrong. They were fearful, but they didn't know what they were fearful of. There are some interviews and clips of Lorraine talking about Amityville. It really sounded like the place and experience did a number on her and her husband. When asked how it compared to the case of the Perron family, another case they investigated, she said this. Amityville was horrible, honey. It was absolutely horrible. It followed us right straight across the country. I don't even like to talk about it. I will never go into the Amityville house again.
Wow.
Yeah, really.
She's very strong about that.
Lorraine had taken a relic into the home with her the day their investigation began. My understanding is this was a religious relic, and its purpose was to help protect the Warrens while they conducted their investigation. According to Lorraine, when they climbed the stairs at the home, Lorraine Warren began feeling like a force of water was hitting her chest. You know, when you stand underneath a waterfall?
Yeah.
Oh
my gosh, okay.
She said she had to rely on the relic to carry her through the rest of their investigation. A photographer joined the couple for the investigation, and the photographer set up an infrared camera, which they claim captured an image of a child. Now, actually, let's pause. Okay, so I've just sent you across the picture of the child.
Ooh, it is so creepy. That seems so clear. Like the details, that's like definitely a little boy. Ooh. I don't like that.
Absolutely. But before you let it scare you too much, because it is, when I first saw it, I was like, what the hell? That's so clearly some kind of entity, some apparition. No two questions about it. But by all accounts, actually, this isn't a photo of a child, but of someone else that was helping to do the investigation. So if you look at the photo again now, you can see that, you know, the eyes are really creepy. If you look closely, you realise those are just glasses.
Oh,
and a reflection of some glasses.
Yeah. Oh, it's not as creepy as I thought.
So, yeah. Yeah, I think it is just some dude helping to do the investigation.
Yeah. We'll definitely post that on our Insta, though, so you guys can have a look for yourself.
We will. We will. The Warrens were convinced until the very end that there was pure evil in the house. The case really helped cement their status as renowned investigators of the paranormal. However, many people believe that the Amityville case was in fact a hoax. Like I mentioned before, the photo with the benefit of hindsight seems to clearly show Paul Blartz, who was one of the investigators there. William Weber, and this is interesting, William Weber, who was the lawyer for Ronald DeFeo Jr.,
mm-hmm.
the murderer, at his trial claims the story of the hauntings is a hoax that he helped create with the Lutz family over bottles of wine.
Really?
How it,
okay.
Yeah, so he's making it sound like, yeah, this was just an idea we had when we were drunk. And there's a lot of moving parts here that I couldn't, to be frank, couldn't really be bothered to like follow, like trace back through all the story, because there's some people that were involved in writing a book, and then obviously you've got people involved in investigations, which is the Warrens. But my very basic understanding is that someone else wrote a book about the hauntings in this place.
Yes.
But this lawyer believes that actually the idea stemmed on a drunken conversation he had with the Lutz parents.
Right. Okay. My gosh.
However, there's always a however. We love a however. However, George Lutz maintained that the events were mostly true. A polygraph test on the Lutzes even indicated they weren't lying about events they experienced at the home. Perhaps most indicative of whether the case is a hoax, though, is that no owners of the home since the Lutz family have reported any problems.
Ooh.
So what do you think then, Georgia? Amityville, real or a hoax?
Ooh. So are there people there's people living in this house currently? Or have...
I can't say for certain...
Currently, or, yeah. Or since the families that have had the spooky occurrences happening, other families have lived there and they haven't reported anything.
Yes, for prolonged periods of time, no problems reported.
I don't know. I feel like maybe it's a bit of both. And I know that sounds very much sitting on the fence. But I think that maybe some spooky things happened, and then it kind of got some attention for it, maybe. And then it all kind of spiraled a little bit out of control. And now it's sort of, yeah, just completely out of control. But then on the other hand, if there were so many people trying to stop, you know, say it's true, and they want to stop all this spooky paranormal occurrences, then maybe there was an exorcism or trying to stop all spooky things happening. And that's why then the families that have lived since then haven't experienced anything, because they managed to get rid of whatever was creeping everyone out. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some kind of cleansing.
Yes, like that, yeah. I'd say probably a little bit of both.
Nice.
What about you? What do you think after you've researched it?
I think it's really interesting because of the murder. Like, this isn't just some random house. This is like something very traumatic has happened.
Incredibly traumatic.
And if you... yeah, that would have been awful. If even as by crime standards. Mm-hmm. But if you think all the way back to our first episode, which was almost a year ago now.
Wow, yes.
Like, the things I talked about in that, about like my beliefs... And it mostly stems back to this kind of like negative energy mm-hmm. that gets attached to a place yeah. when something traumatic happens. So I can kind of believe that you walk into Amityville House and you just feel like a presence. You feel
atmosphere from what has occurred before.
Exactly. I don't know if I think some of the details have probably been embellished and exaggerated. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have made a lot of money from this story.
Yeah.
And I lean more towards it being a hoax just based on like how crazy some of these details seem.
Yeah.
But I do believe that if I walked into the Amityville House today, I would feel unsettled. I'd feel all the things that you associate with like a paranormal experience.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I think that's a very good point. For sure. It's spooky though.
Indeed.
Spooky nonetheless.
It is spooky. It is spooky because it comes from such a traumatic, awful place. Mm-hmm. The second case we're going to go through is possibly the most famous case covered by the Warrens. Annabelle the Raggedy Doll.
Oh, I hate dolls so much.
So those of you that have seen the Conjuring films will know of Annabelle. And the Conjuring film that's also called Annabelle... features a very menacing and extremely creepy-looking doll.
Oh, it's horrible. It's so horrible.
But what I've done is I've just sent you a picture of the real Annabelle, which just made me laugh, to be honest.
I'm so surprised that's what she looks like. I honestly, that seems sort of cute. in a weird sort of like weird, like it's just so, it's just not what I expected. Like, I'd happily have her in my house.
Yeah, it makes it really hard for me to take the story seriously. just because it does, it's just like a mass-produced Raggedy Ann doll. Soft plush, of course, we'll share this picture with the Instagram post, so yeah, go back and reference it.
Yeah. It's the shaggy hair. It's almost sweet, but... it's true, the Annabelle movies, like that is literally, as soon as you say Annabelle, The Conjuring and all of that, instantly go to that really, really creepy, horrible doll. But I'm sure I probably won't think that this doll is as sweet as it looks by the end of this case. Yeah.
Well, let's find out. I think that it's just difficult to take it seriously, but we'll give it a go. So the story goes like this. In 1970, a student nurse received the Raggedy Ann doll as a gift from her mother for her 28th birthday. The doll was one of those mass-produced Raggedy Ann dolls with a big red triangle for a nose and googly eyes. The student nurse, who was known as Donna, lived with a roommate and fellow nurse called Angie. They'd find the doll randomly shifting positions, which was a point of amusement for the pair at first. Initially, the doll remained confined to the bed and would fall off, roll around or something. As time wore on, the doll began appearing in completely different rooms than they had left it.
Ooh. Okay.
Sometimes the doll would be found with its arms and legs folded as if it was mad. Strange notes began to appear, written on parchment paper, that pleaded for help. What makes this more unsettling is that the pair didn't even keep parchment paper in the house, and that the handwriting made it look like the notes had been written by a child.
Oh, that is sort of creepy, actually. That's pretty unsettling.
The two roommates called in a medium for help. This medium wasn't the Warrens, but the medium did tell the roommates that the doll had taken on the spirit of a 7-year-old girl who had died on the land years earlier. Wow. The girl's name was Annabelle Higgins.
Oh. Okay. So, when you say that these dolls were mass-produced, was the name of the dolls also called Annabelle? Or was it just because it's taken the spirit's name?
I don't know what the name of the dolls is, actually. And I'm also just kind of assuming it's mass-produced because I've seen that doll so many times.
Okay.
But yeah, I think the Annabelle name came exclusively just from this Annabelle Higgins.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
The roommates, after hearing the story, decided to keep the doll as they felt sympathy for the child's spirit.
Yeah.
That might have been a mistake. Because
One night,
the doll attacked. According to a story, the fiancé of one roommate woke one night and was unable to move. He felt Annabelle the doll gliding up his leg until the doll was perched on his chest, staring at him.
Ooh, no. No.
The doll's hands began to wrap around his neck. And it's like, that is scary. That sounds scary. But then I just picture the doll. And I picture the doll doing that.
I know.
And it just makes me laugh.
I think, though, no matter, you know, the googly eyes and the shaggy hair and things, I think that still would be pretty creepy. But it is also, yeah, it's also comical in a weird sort of way. And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be.
It's... Yeah, I mean, I have sympathy if there is someone out there that this really happened to, because if it actually happened, no matter what the doll looked like, it would be scary. But if someone, like, let's say, for example, someone made, like, a short horror film of this incident, and it was with that doll, I would just find it amusing.
Yeah. 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 Oh, dear.
The case eventually reached the Warrens, and they began to investigate. They interviewed the roommates and the fiancé, and they also inspected the doll. They concluded that a demonic spirit had attached itself to the doll. They conducted a spiritual cleansing, but Donna was apparently completely done with the doll and wanted it removed.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame her.
Yeah, not me.
Yeah.
The Warrens took the doll home with them to be kept at the museum. Ed claimed that on the car journey, the brakes and the steering on the car repeatedly failed.
Oh no.
They had to use holy water to, in essence, restrain the doll for the rest of the journey.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
According to one story, one man and woman who visited the museum mocked the Annabelle doll.
Oh no.
Shit.
Oh,
kind of like
no.
We're doing now, actually.
I was waiting for that. I was so hoping you weren't going to say something like this.
After I've been laughing about it, oh God, maybe my enjoyable start to 2022 is going to come to an abrupt end after finishing this episode.
Oh no.
According to the Warrens, the couple that mocked the doll suffered from failing brakes on their journey home and the man sadly died.
Oh my gosh, no! Oh no. I'm sorry, Annabelle. Oh, that's awful.
Don't worry, the however will save us. However, was it true? So much of this story came directly from the Warrens, as far as I can tell. So all the stories and everything else would only have been verifiable by them.
Okay.
The roommates have never been identified. At least I couldn't find them anywhere.
Okay.
Some people have explored whether there is truth behind the cases investigated by the Warrens. Steve Novella and Perry DeAngelis, which is a great partnership name, by the way.
Really cool.
Belonged to the New England Skeptical Society, and they did their own investigation on the Warrens. They found the Warrens to be pleasant people, but concluded the couple were, and quotes, at best tellers of meaningless ghost stories, and at worst, dangerous frauds.
Wow, that's pretty strong words.
Strong wording. They found common errors with flash photography, and no evidence of evil in the artifacts that the Warrens had collected over the years. That pretty much brings the case and this episode to an end.
Mm.
But what do you think? Do you think the Warrens were genuine? Or do you think there are a couple of fraudsters?
This is such a difficult one. I'm not sure. They're such famous cases, though. Like, everybody has pretty much heard of them. There have been horror movies made from these stories. So it's difficult. I don't know. I definitely don't want to ever see Annabelle or look her in the eye now that I've giggled about her. I'm worried that I'm going to have like nightmares now of this little shaggy googly-eyed doll. I'm so scared. But yeah, I'm not sure about them. I don't know. I think I'm going to have to do a lot of like YouTubing and watching like videos of them and having a little... See how... You know, how they kind of like represent themselves, maybe.
What's interesting, it's interesting you say that, because it seems like even all the skeptical people that investigated them did say they're really nice people.
Yeah. I don't know. It's strange, though, like you said right at the start, that Lorraine was a skeptic at first. Even though she'd had experiences as a child, she still wasn't sure whether she truly believed in it all. And then to build her whole life on this, it's... No, it's just a strange one. What do you think after all hearing or researching it?
I am going to be controversial and lean more towards the hoax side. I don't know. I just think some of the, obviously I believe in like paranormal stuff.
Yeah.
We're doing a paranormal podcast and I've even had some of my own experiences, but
yes,
some of them just feel like really far-fetched. And like so many of it, or so many details of the cases are only verifiable by them. So it's not really...
Like there needs to be more to back it up, maybe. Or like some more evidence. Or for them to be more transparent with how they found their findings. Or what they did in the investigation to gain that result. Maybe might give more clarity or kind of verify what they're saying. otherwise we're just going on opinions or hearsay, basically.
Yeah, and like the Amityville picture of the child, like that's when you realise what it is, and it's just a bloke wearing glasses.
Mm.
It's like so obvious, and that just kind of makes you think, like, oh, is this someone trying to be a fraudster?
But
it's interesting.
It is an interesting one. I also think though, when you have paranormal cases this huge, you're always going to have people that are skeptical, and you're always going to have people that doubt you, and so I think it's very difficult. People are more likely to not believe you than believe you, I'd say, in situations like this. So I think it's quite difficult to kind of gain that trust, because people in the paranormal, you know, people don't know if paranormal is true or not. Like, it's a very...
divisive.
Yeah, divisive. It's difficult to prove, which is why there's a lot of scepticism surrounding this kind of topic.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are like, on one side of the spectrum, adamant it's not possible, doesn't exist, and they will just go into everything with like, there's no way this is possible, to the point where sometimes they actually come up with theories that are almost equally as ludicrous as, hey, there's just something that we can't explain going on here. But then you've got the other side, which is people that maybe are like so adamant it exists that they look for it in places where they don't need to. And it's if the experiences that the Warrens had were real, you know, maybe they did just embellish a lot of it because their livelihoods depended on that. So I don't necessarily think that they are complete fraudsters. Like I said, even the skeptical people who were presumably on the other side of that spectrum, like the first part I mentioned about, still said they were nice people and like very pleasant, very affable, and they liked them. So it's quite hard to be that way on one side of the spectrum and not piss off the people on the other side, but they clearly didn't. So, yeah, maybe it's just...
they're very respectful in that
way. Maybe they're just decent people that enjoy doing this and, you know, also, for the sake of their livelihoods, added a few bits of spice and seasoning in there.
Yeah, maybe. I think that's probably the best bet. I don't think this came out of nothing. I don't think that they suddenly went... I know that something incredibly tragic happened at the Amityville Horror House, but with Annabelle, I think it'd be quite far-fetched for it to just appear out of nothing. I think there must have been some sort of spooky occurrences that were happening for it then to maybe unravel into like this big famous case, I guess. Infamous case.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that the Annabelle case was just like the Warrens at Toys R Us going like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we made... I don't think it's like that. But when I read the story, it does make me think there was three people, I think, living with that doll. The two roommates and one fiancé. Was one of them just having a little mess about? It spirals out of control. Yeah. Like a prank gone crazy. The Warrens end up getting called.
They just gotta go with it, roll with it now, because
So it's an interesting one. I'd be really curious to hear what listeners think, whether they believe the Warrens are legit, some dodginess, but largely legit, or if they think it's just pure fraud.
And I think also going back slightly to the Annabelle case as well, if they were going to choose a doll to have these things happening, I don't know whether they would have chosen Annabelle.
Agreed.
I don't think, yeah.
And please...
whether it adds to the creepiness, I don't know.
Or maybe that's what they want you to think.
Yeah.
But do you want to talk through the socials, just in case anyone wants to share their opinion on whether the Warrens were legit?
Yes, of course. So you can send your own true crime or paranormal stories, we'd love to hear them, to our email address at goreandguiltypodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Instagram @goreandguiltypodcast. You can also follow us on Twitter @goreandguilty. And if you like this podcast, then feel free to subscribe, review, share, like, all of that lovely stuff. And remember, we won't judge if
gore is your guilty pleasure.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Bye.